वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, Text 44.
Atha Niryaya Salilat Prachetasa
Somebody adjust this mic, it's actually falling. Yeah, thank you.
Udanvata Viksha Akupyan Rumai Chanam Gam Gam Dradum Eva Uchvatai. Atha Niryaya Salilat Prachetasa Udanvatam Diksha kupyan rumaischanam gam gam rodam vivochvitai atha niryaya salilat prachetasa udanvata Tikshaku pyandru maishchanam Gam gam rodhum uvauchvatai Ata niryaya salilat Prachetasa udanvata Tikshaku pyandru maishchanam Gam gam rodhum uvochvatai.
Thank you.
Ladies, please. Thereafter, Niryaya, after coming out, Salilat, from the water, Prachetasa, all the Prachetas, Udanvata, of the sea, Diksha, having observed, Akupyan became very angry, Drumai by trees, Chanam covered, Gam the world, Gam the heavenly planets, Rodum to obstruct, Eva as if, Uchvatai very tall. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Thereafter, all the Prachetas emerged from the waters of the sea. They then saw that all the trees on land had grown very tall, as if to obstruct the path to the heavenly planets. These trees had covered the entire surface of the world. At this time, the Prachetas became very angry. Please repeat. Thereafter, all the Prachetas emerged from the waters of the sea. They then saw that all the trees on land had grown very tall, as if to obstruct the path to the heavenly planets. These trees had covered the entire surface of the world. At this time, the Prachetas became very angry. Purport. King Prachina Bharishat left his kingdom before his sons arrived after their execution of penance and austerity. The sons, the Prachetas, were ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to come out of the water and go to the kingdom of their father in order to take care of that kingdom. However, when they came out, they saw that everything had been neglected due to the king's absence. They first observed that food grains were not being produced, and that there were no agricultural activities. Indeed, the surface of the world was practically covered by very tall trees. It seemed as though the trees were determined to stop people from going into outer space to reach the heavenly kingdoms. The Prachetas became very angry when they saw the surface of the globe covered in this way. They desired that the land be cleared for crops. It is not a fact that jungles and trees attract clouds and rain, because we find rainfall over the sea. Human beings can inhabit any place on the surface of the earth by clearing jungles and converting land for agricultural purposes. People can keep cows, and all economic problems can be solved in that way. One need only work to produce grains and take care of cows. The wood found in the jungles may be used for constructing cottages. In this way, the economic problems of humanity can be solved. At the present moment, there are many vacant lands throughout the world, and if they are properly utilized, there will be no scarcity of food. As far as rain is concerned, it is the performance of yajna that attracts rain. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 3:14, Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anasambhavam yagyad bhavati parjanyo yagya karma samud bhavam, which means all living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yagya or sacrifice, and yagya is born of prescribed duties. By performing sacrifice, man will have sufficient rainfall and crops. Omagyana timirandas yag gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Though the Prachetas have been submerged in water for, I think, 10,000 years, and this is quite an austerity, to say the least. When they came out, as the text indicates, they saw trees all over the place, and they became angry. So this would seem to be some expression of the mode of passion, but actually it is not. It's expression of the mode of goodness on the highest level. Their concern was that all these trees were here, and they were taking up the space for land which could be used to plant crops and feed people. So their chief concern was to feed people, to make sure that everyone was nourished and strengthened and vitalized. They were not even concerned about their own needs. I mean, after you've been in the water for 10,000 years, it seemed the first thing you'd want is, I'd like a big bowl of prasadam. Or something like that. Because, you get hungry down there. So, it's only natural that for a materialist to think that way. Very often, people are in a situation in which they have to endure some austerity. Sometimes mountain climbers, they go up and they get stuck. They get caught in a storm. And there's a rescue team. And after 5 or 6 days, they finally locate them, and they save them, rescue them, and they get them back, and the fingers are slightly frostbitten. And they're asked, well, what would you like? What have you been dreaming of? So quite often they'll say, I just want a big bowl of hot soup, or just give me a Big Mac, or just give me something that I can enjoy. I just miss the food. So they just think of their own stomach, of course. It's not the worst thing in the world, but here we have the Prachetas. They're not even thinking of themselves. They're thinking of the persons whom they will come to rule. And the first thought of the king is not himself, but his subjects. His concern is to make sure that there is food, there is clothing, there is shelter, there is medicine, people are organized according to the system of Van Ashram, and that people are showing necessary respect to each other in this system, and that everyone is cooperating and helping in the development and maintenance of the country or the world or part of the world that the king is ruling. So that is a very important principle there. The Prachetas had gotten so purified that they couldn't even think about themselves. And that's actually a very high principle. And this does not mean that the point here is not that we should neglect our bodies, or we should neglect our minds, or ignore our intelligence, or that we should perform those kinds of austerities that will make the body weak or upset or disturbed. That's not the point. Srila Prabhupada made it very clear over and over that we should, yes, take care of the body, take care of the mind, make sure it is nourished, make sure it receives prasadam. But after that, finished. Let's get on to the real business. That's only a means to do something higher. And the higher is to glorify Krishna, serve Krishna, adore Krishna, surrender to Krishna, read about Krishna, think about Krishna, share Krishna with others. This is our main business. But of course, if a person is very hungry, unless he is highly advanced, it may be difficult because all he's thinking about is his stomach. And persons who are on a lower spiritual level may not be able to think about anything spiritual until their bellies are full. As we can see, the Prachetas, having endured a tremendous amount of austerity, which is, by the way, one of the benefits of austerity, is that it allows you to keep your mind peaceful under all circumstances. In other words, what you've been doing is enduring difficulty, trial, tribulation, pressure, stress. But it's voluntary. And because it's voluntary, you've trained the mind to keep it peaceful, calm, and controlled, which is actually yoga. As Krishna says, perform your duty equipoised, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Also, Krishna says, it is not possible to practice yoga if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or doesn't sleep enough. But one who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material miseries. So that's a very good instruction because it's saying that we should be moderate, we should be regulated, we should be controlled, we should not go to extremes, but keep the mind peaceful. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he obtains, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. This is what perfect knowledge is. The mind remains peaceful under all difficulties, adversities, troubles, and trials. And we learn that through these different austerities. For example, we're getting up early in the morning, we're greeting the deity. Now, generally speaking, people, they don't want to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning or 3:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. They just want to sleep and lazy away and just take it easy. Because the goal of material life is to enjoy, to be comfortable, to have conveniences, to pamper the body, to praise the body, to applaud the body, to protect the body, even beyond what it may need. And the main point is my body and my mind, meaning the thoughts that are connected to that unfortunate identification. So persons in general, having come originally from the spiritual world and coming into this world, the soul becomes covered. And in the covering, different kinds of ignorances are forced upon it. Lord Brahma has created those five kinds of ignorance, the first of which is we forget who we really are. We came to this world to enjoy. We came to this world to be a lord, to be a god, to forget the real God, and to get everybody to remember or to acknowledge or recognize that we're God. This is why we're here. This is mentioned also in this fourth canto, when Queen Puranjani is lamenting the loss of the death of her husband, King Puranjana. And so the Lord tells her that we once were together. We were together in the eternal world, but you left my company to become an enjoyer of this material world. So in doing that, this ignorance, the forgetfulness of who we really are, namely that we are an eternal, spiritual soul, minute, indivisible, eternal, ever-existing, primeval. We cannot be killed by fire. We can't be slashed by weapons. We can't be drowned by water. Only the body can. And the body, of course, as we know, is temporary. It's limited. It's fragile. It's destructible. At any given moment, it can be destroyed. You can be sitting here, you can feel healthy, you can walk out, and then suddenly get a heart attack. And there are many people, they go to the doctor gives him, checks his blood pressure, checks his heart, checks his different, his blood, and checks his urine, checks so many different things. He says, you're healthy. You're perfect. You're going to live till 90 years old. And he takes a walk down the block and has a heart attack. And he's out. Finished. So what appears to be healthy and strong and vigorous is not necessarily. Krishna has his own agenda for each and every one of us according to our karma. So we can never be that confident. In fact, Srila Prabhupada makes the point again and again. He said, you can leave this world at any moment. You don't know. Therefore, always try to remember Krishna. Krishna himself says that. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So Krishna urges, and Prabhupada urges us to try. It's so difficult because the mind is programmed not to want to think of Krishna. It wants to think of ourselves, our sense enjoyment, our intellectual enjoyment, our mental enjoyment, our false ego development. In other words, my adoration, my profit, my distinction, all of these things we're thinking of because we don't want to leave the conception that I am this body. Well, when a person no longer thinks of those things, then gradually, slowly, the ignorance that we are our body gradually disappears. I was mentioning five kinds of ignorance. The second kind of ignorance is that we actually, as I said, we think we are the physical body. The third is to believe firmly that by physical or sensual enjoyment, we will be truly happy. When the opposite is true. The opposite is true because the more pleasures that we have, the more attached we become to those pleasures. And as we become attached to those pleasures, when we can't get them, we become anxious. And we become anxious and we still don't get them, then we feel frustrated. And when we feel frustrated, the next thing is to feel angry. And when we feel angry, we may shoot our anger out at someone here, there, we don't know. It may result in a fight. And the fight may result in death or injury. So attachment to material objects is always a no-win situation. Although initially it may seem to be a win situation because we have the pleasure. But the pleasure is temporary. And actually the soul wants permanent peace. It wants permanent joy. It wants permanent happiness. It wants permanent strength. It wants permanent freedom. It wants all these things which it cannot find in the material world. It can only find them in the inner world. As Krishna says, one whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward is the perfect mystic. He's liberated in the Supreme Lord, and ultimately he attains the Supreme Lord. So inner happiness, inner joy, inner strength, inner peace, these are the things that a devotee strives for. Not deliberately and not directly, they are more of a byproduct of what of his process of bhakti yoga. In other words, the devotee's only concern is to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, to glorify Krishna, and to share Krishna with as many persons as possible. That's his goal. He's not concerned about how blissful he'll be, how peaceful he'll be, but because Krishna sees the heart of the devotee, he sees his effort, he sees his intensity, his sincerity, he sees all these, and the Lord living in the heart, right beside the soul, smiles upon the soul. And when it smiles upon the soul and glances upon the soul feels that in the form of transcendental peace and joy and strength and so forth. That comes in different degrees according to what Krishna wants to give us. He may flood us, as we see some of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they could hardly keep up their consciousness. And some of them left their external consciousness and entered into the inner consciousness of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So this, of course, is a very advanced stage. So we don't strive for, we don't aspire for, to be blissful. We don't have to. It's our nature. It's only necessary to do what is necessary to become aware of our nature. That's all. It's not that we have to get something from anywhere. It's already there. But it has to be unveiled or uncovered, exposed. It's like you have a treasure. And the treasure is there, but it's covered. So we need the key to open up the lock. And once you get the key, and then you open the lock, and then the top comes up, and you see all the jewels there, the emeralds and the gold and the sapphires and the diamonds. They're all there. And not that we had to go, but we had to get the key to open the lid. And the key has been given so graciously, so lovingly by Srila Prabhupada. He's given us that key in the form of hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, serving his lotus feet, offering prayers to the Lord, practical service to Krishna, a friendly association with the Lord. And also, he's taught us by his own personal example how to surrender one's body and one's mind and one's words to the Lord in glorification of Krishna. And by doing that, Krishna, being pleased in the heart, reciprocates with his devotees in different degrees. Now, sometimes Krishna will reciprocate with the devotee, and the devotee will feel, yes, I'm getting the reciprocation of Krishna, and this is very wonderful, this is very great. And he comes to expect that. So this is not good. To come to expect it means that I become very fruitive about my spiritual bliss. And that is not the goal. The goal is not bliss. As I said, it is a natural byproduct of pure devotional service. So when Krishna sees that we become fruitive for his rewards or his gifts, he may withdraw them temporarily so that we come to the realization that we're not really worthy of all this. If we look back into our background, we see so much sin, so much degradation, so much offense. And the result of that is that we should be suffering endlessly. But out of the causeless mercy of Krishna and his great servant, Srila Prabhupada, he has come forth to relieve us of this burden of misery that we normally would experience. Consequently, instead, we get a technique, we get a method of how to become free of that misery through the process of bhakti yoga or devotional service through surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. By doing this, we gradually and slowly come to this realization of who we are and why we're here and what the true purpose of life is, and we experience it. And that bliss is a part of that. Sometimes the Lord will give bliss to the devotees or peace to the devotees as a means to bring him or to give him or her faith in this process. But we should never become fruitive. Whatever comes from the Lord, our position has to be, I'm unworthy of this. I don't deserve this. Why am I even getting this? Did the Lord make a mistake? Obviously he has, but because he's so merciful, that's what mercy is. Getting a gift that we don't deserve. It's kind of like if you have, you borrow some money from somebody and you swear to pay it back in 2 months, $1,000. You know you're going to have it. You lose your job. You don't have it. So you go to the person you borrowed the money for. I'm out of a job, but I'll be glad. I'll be happy to do any kind of service that I can because I know I have a debt to you. I have an obligation, and I should pay this. And I feel very ashamed that I can't pay it. So may I do some service for you? I'll be glad to clean your car. I'll be glad to come into your house and clean your home. I'll do anything that I can to assist you so that I can be relieved of this burden. He says, well, you know, with an attitude like that, and I've got so much money, just forget the $1,000. Whenever you get it, you can pay it, but don't feel obliged to it. It's okay. This is a gift. That's a gift. That's mercy. And that's what Krishna is giving us. So we can't take it for granted that I'm here because I have achieved some state of high spirituality, and therefore, as a result, I'm being placed in this position, and in this position, I'm worthy of it, I deserve it, and everyone should recognize me, look up to me, admire me, adore me, and so forth. This is wrong. This is not the position. The devotee always takes the humble position, one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Why constantly? Because when we chant in that manner, bliss is bubbling like anything. you take a champagne or 7-Up and you shake it up and you take the top off, whoosh, it just shoots up. And similarly, when we chant in the proper way with love in our heart, with appreciation, with devotion, with thankfulness, with a sense of being the most fortunate person in the world, I've got something that is so great, it's so wonderful, and Krishna has allowed me to have it in spite of the fact that I'm not worthy of it. When we chant in that attitude, then Krishna reciprocates with endless bubbles of bliss. That's why we can chant continuously, because we don't feel worthy of it. We feel unworthy. We feel, and if somebody offends us, we don't feel offended. If somebody insults us, we don't feel insulted. If circumstances go against us or difficulties befall us, we don't worry about it. Because when we have taken the position of total surrender, it means thy will be done, your will, Krishna, be done. If you want to clobber me, clobber me. If you want to embrace me, embrace me. Whatever you want to do, I accept, because whatever you do is good. Your name is God, and whatever you do is good. 1A different. 1O different. So, God is good. He cannot do any wrong. And and the result is that the devotee feels very... that he feels that devotional service is not a right, but an opportunity, a privilege. It's actually the greatest privilege in the world to perform devotional service. So when a person is sweeping the floor or cleaning the toilets or cooking the food or whatever it is, actually each devotee should feel that he has gotten the greatest privilege in the world, that there's nothing better, nothing higher, nothing greater. One should not be looking at the CEO of Ford or General Motors and say, yeah, I wish I had the position like that. I'd have millions and millions of dollars. But those guys are sweating bullets now. They're really in trouble. Those companies are about to go under. And with all their millions, they're worried about whether the company is going to go on, because 2 million workers are going to get pink checks. Or what do they call them? Pink slips. They're going to get that. No question about it, unless, of course, the government, now they've asked, first they asked for $25 billion to help bail them out. Now they've just come forth yesterday for another bailout of $37 billion. The first time they came in 3 different Learjets, and they were chastised severely by the Senate for that. Here you are asking us for $25 billion, and you come in 3 different jets from 3 different companies. Where is your sense of austerity? So this time, you know what they did? They came in. They came in there. What do they call those cars which work on half electricity and half gas? Huh? Hybrids. So 3 hybrids came storming across the Pennsylvania Turnpike, 15-hour ride, showing them that they do have some austerity still left in them. It's amazing, you know, how public opinion can compel people to make certain modifications in their lives. So I was talking about 5 different kinds of ignorance. The other is that we think that anger will somehow improve our situation. When we're frustrated, we become angry. And when I become angry, I think somehow my anger will frighten somebody or upset somebody in such a way that I'll get what I want. And this is an illusion, because the more angry we are over not receiving our sense pleasure or comfort or convenience, the more angry we just reinforce our attachment to material things. If I'm angry because you didn't give me my whatever it is, my prasadam or my food or my blanket or whatever it, that means that I'm so attached to this. But if I'm totally surrendered, and what happens is you didn't give it to me, and you gave me a good explanation why you couldn't, then I may look elsewhere, but keep my mind peaceful and keep it calm, and so that I'm able to keep myself in a focused, Krishna-conscious way. So anger, and I'm talking about materialistic anger. There's such a thing as spiritual anger, and I'm not talking about that, because Srila Prabhupada often showed spiritual anger. And unless you're very advanced, it's not good to exercise this. It's first good to learn to control anger and to dissipate so that you don't have any anger. And then if the circumstances warrant that you're in a position of authority, you may have to exhibit anger in order to get the worker whom you're expressing anger toward to wake up, perk up, and see that he's made some mistakes. And he's made these mistakes. It's not helping his spiritual advancement. So sometimes you have to be angry, but there should not be any feeling of that I'm hurt by what he did. When we have detachment, we don't feel hurt, because we're not identified with the body. And if we're not identified with the body, if we know we are the soul, we know we're eternal, then who can hurt us? Nobody. So that identification takes time. Sometimes devotees complain that austerity, it's so difficult, it's so uncomfortable, and it's just, I don't know how I'm going to go through this. And that's only at the beginning, because our senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the skin, are so impure that as soon as you give them some pure activity, and you do it on a voluntary basis, it coalesces, it conflicts with all the impurity. But gradually, as the impurities are washed away through the process of sadhana bhakti, rising early in the morning and coming to Mangalartik and coming to the Guru Puja, reading these books, studying these books, distributing these books, gradually, as Rupa Goswami so nicely said, that we're all in a state of like a person who has yellow jaundice. If he takes some sweet rock candy, he puts it on his tongue, it tastes bitter because the bile that is going through the bloodstream and manifesting through his saliva makes the rock candy taste bitter. But the rock candy is the cure. It's the cure to get rid of the yellow jaundice. So as he keeps taking the rock candy, gradually, as the disease disappears, what happens is that the sweetness begins to appear. And as the sweetness appears, then the disease is gradually becoming less and less and less, until finally he can taste the full sweetness. So that's the way it is in devotional service. We have to be very patient with ourselves. We have to be very enduring. We have to be very persevering. And we have to understand that there are many devotees, many senior men and women I know, are experiencing transcendental bliss and peace and strength and happiness. And just on the basis of what they share with us and what they encourage us to continue doing, we should maintain our faith, whatever we have, and keep developing that faith by performing this perfect process called sadhana bhakti. So I think I'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Are there any questions? I left little. Any comments any of you would like to make on it? No questions? Everybody agrees? Everybody thinks that Krishna is God still? You haven't changed your opinion? Thank you. Hare Krishna.
You are becoming younger, I am becoming older.